Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Zelda Universe ZUcast podcast, episode 18, spectacular podcast, episode 18, Zelda Universe.
I'm Laughing Boy LP. You can call me either that or Andrew. It doesn't matter.
And my name is Peyton Gare, and I go by Emperor P on the internet, and we will be your hosts today for the Zelda Universe podcast.
Episode 18, extravaganza. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if I was going to do this intro, I would have accidentally said episode 19, or I would have called it another show that I run, and we don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, that's fair. Welcome to Creators of Hyrule, everybody. That's definitely what the show is. Or is this Hades?
No, this is
Hades Miss
straight Skylands. From the mouth of Emperor, quote, only one take P. So what's episode 18 about? We got a lot of stuff to talk about, don't we? We don't want to keep our editor busy.
Yeah. So first up, we have Zelda history with Shona. I believe she's covering 2001 to 2005. After that, we've got a review of Nintendo's E3 Direct with Randy. And then coming up after that, we have the Zelda Realm, which is when Realm and Zelda Ann are going to be looking over the 2021 Breath of the Wild sequel trailer as compared to the 2019 Breath of the Wild sequel trailer. And then back to one of our newer segment hosts, although I say that he's been here for like 3 podcasts now. We've got Piece of Heart with Connor, where he's discussing the Master Sword in A Link to the Past.
How are you doing today, Peyton?
Dude, I'm doing fan-friggin-tastic.
That's not what you said earlier. I'm doing great. We just came back from Pokemon Go Fest, just to date this episode exactly.
Scandalous.
So hopefully any of our Pokemon Go fans, you know, I'm sure people like things other than Zelda that listen to the ZU podcast. Hello out there, whoever you are.
I
hope you had a safe and wonderful hot weekend. It was disgustingly hot outside. But for now, we're going to transition over to our first segment, as Peyton mentioned, Zelda History Part 4, 2001 to 2005. Take it away, our pre-recorded Shona.
Sometimes I think that the 90s would have been a pretty good time to be a Zelda fan because of that early Nintendo boom. But the truth is that for almost half the decade, there was a big gap in between game releases, at least in the West. The 2000s were the opposite, with new Zelda games being released almost every single year. My name is Shona Johnson, and in this segment I'll be exploring the history of the Zelda series from the years 2001 to 2005. What's better than one new Zelda game? How about two at the same time? That's what happened in 2001, when the two Oracle games were released for the Game Boy Color. Oracle of Seasons and Oracle of Ages were the first official Zelda titles not directly developed by Nintendo. They were developed by Capcom, with close oversight from Nintendo. After all, those CDI games were the result of someone making Zelda games without involvement from Nintendo. Fortunately, the Oracle games were received incredibly well, and Capcom went on to have further involvement with the franchise. While the Oracle games look similar at first glance, they're two distinct games. Oracle of Seasons focuses on action over puzzle solving, and its gameplay is dictated by the seasons, something that Link can control in-game to affect the world around him. Oracle of Ages focuses more on puzzles and utilizes a time travel mechanic which affects the parts of the world that are accessible. The two games can be linked via passwords, and there's even a special linked ending. The next Zelda game for Nintendo's latest console, the GameCube, was revealed in 2001. The year before, Nintendo had shown off a short video of a fight between Link and Ganondorf, which blew everyone away at the time with its realistic graphics. This video was a technical demo of the GameCube's graphical prowess, and not supposed to be a look at the next Zelda game, but it certainly steered expectations. The Zelda game that Nintendo actually revealed was something completely different. Cartoons, slapstick comedy, and heavy styling. It sent shockwaves throughout the community. Many people at the time reacted in anger or confusion, and the voices who liked it from the very beginning were few and far between. I will fully admit that I myself didn't much like it when I first saw it. You see, these days, Nintendo is known for being a bit different from the other major game companies and going off and doing their own thing. This new graphical style was an early example of this. But this was still an era where Nintendo was directly competing with PlayStation and Xbox, and game companies were striving to make graphics more and more realistic. That's one of the reasons why the decision to make the next Zelda game a cartoon appeared outrageous at the time. Nintendo had employed a technique called cell shading to achieve the cartoony graphics. This was actually something new and pretty advanced. Maybe they were just experimenting, or maybe they realised early on that more realistic graphics weren't going to age well, but the revelation of Toon Link marked a huge turning point for the Zelda franchise, both in the direction that the series was going to take, as well as how it was perceived. Another Super Smash Bros. Game came out towards the end of 2001. Super Smash Bros. Melee featured an expanded roster, and this meant more Zelda characters. Link, Ganondorf, Young Link, and Zelda all appear as fighters, with Zelda also being able to transform into Sheik. Melee added more content and things to do, but where it really shines is in its multiplayer gameplay, and it has become an incredibly popular fighting game, still featuring at tournaments today, despite newer Smash Bros. Games being released since. Before we move on to 2002, one other thing I want to quickly highlight is that our website, Zelda Universe, launched in 2001. The early 2000s saw the online Zelda community flourish, and dozens of fan sites opened during this time. In 2002, A Link to the Past was re-released on the Game Boy Advance. It was bundled with an extra game, Four Swords, a brand new multiplayer Zelda for 2-4 players in which they must work together to journey through randomized dungeons and solve puzzles. There was a bit of a problem though. In order for 4 people to play the game together, you needed 4 Game Boy Advances, 4 copies of the game, and 3 Game Boy Link cables. This could be pretty hard to find at the time, and you were lucky to be able to find even one other person to play with. Four Swords was co-developed by Capcom, and introduced some other concepts that appeared in later games, including the Four Sword and the villainous Vaati. 2002 was when that controversial cartoony Zelda game I mentioned earlier was released in Japan, the game we now know as The Wind Waker. The early cel-shaded graphics seen at the 2001 reveal had been polished, and early criticism of the graphical style quickly turned to praise as the game's huge and beautiful world was brought to life. Cel-shading allowed characters to show more detailed facial expressions, something that worked incredibly well to convey emotion. I said earlier that I wasn't a fan of the cartoony look when I first saw it, but it didn't take long for The Wind Waker to win me over when I started playing it, and it's now one of my favourite Zelda games. In fact, I'd say that the biggest criticisms of The Wind Waker didn't end up being the graphics at all, but more about the gameplay. The game features a massive overworld, the Great Sea, which features 50 islands to explore. However, sailing between these islands is pretty tedious. The game's level of difficulty was also an issue with some players, as it was significantly easier than any Zelda game before it. That said, The Wind Waker hit plenty of high points, especially with its story. It features probably the best version of Ganondorf we've seen to date, as it dives into his motivations and turns him from being a generic baddie into something more human. As a bonus, fans who pre-ordered The Wind Waker received a copy of Ocarina of Time and a more difficult version of it, Ocarina of Time Master Quest, for the GameCube. Master Quest featured more difficult dungeons than the original. 2003 saw The Wind Waker released outside of Japan, and later, The Legend of Zelda Collector's Edition for GameCube. The Collector's Edition was only available through Nintendo Power magazine, or with the purchase of a new GameCube console for a limited time. It contained 4 games: The Legend of Zelda, The Adventure of Link, Ocarina of Time, and Majora's Mask. It also had a demo of The Wind Waker and a Zelda retrospective video. 2004 brought us 2 new Zelda games, Four Swords Adventures on the GameCube, and the Minish Cap on the Game Boy Advance, although some parts of the world wouldn't see these games until 2005. Together with Four Swords, which was released a couple of years earlier, these three games form a trilogy which tells the story of the Four Sword and the villain Vaati. Four Swords Adventures is another multiplayer game like Four Swords, but includes a single player mode. If there's more than one player, each must have a Game Boy Advance, which acts as the controller, and a GameCube Game Boy Advance link cable. Like in Four Swords, players work together to solve puzzles in the main quest called Hyrulean Adventure, but there's also a competitive battle mode called Shadow Battle. The Minish Cap expands on the story from Four Swords and Four Swords Adventures. Its main mechanism is that Link finds a magical talking hat that has the power to shrink him down in size. When shrunk, he can interact with a race called the Minish, and certain areas of the game can only be accessed while small. It allowed for a new perspective on the world, and enemies such as the humble Choo Choo suddenly became a lot more threatening because they were many times the size of Link. The controversial reveal of the Wind Waker wasn't the only Zelda game announcement that sparked a huge reaction. Nintendo's press conference at E3 in 2004 was probably the most memorable one of them all. Right at the very end of the conference, one final game was shown. Now, most people assumed that if there was going to be another Zelda game on GameCube, it would follow in the Wind Waker's footsteps and use cel shading. So when Nintendo showed off a realistic-looking Zelda for the GameCube, they once again broke the internet, or at least the Zelda community. The hype was unbelievable. 2005 was a quieter year because there actually wasn't a new Zelda game release, but the hype over the realistic new Zelda game continued. We found out this year that it would be called Twilight Princess, and it was playable at E3. It was originally planned to be released in November, but then Nintendo announced that it would be delayed. All in all, the first half of the 2000s was busy. The Zelda franchise expanded rapidly and experienced some of its biggest highs and lows, burgeoned on by a flourishing online community. If you have memories from this time, we'd love for you to share them in the comments. Do you remember being upset when Toon Link was first shown? Or were you incredibly hyped for Twilight Princess? It's funny, although I ended up loving the Wind Waker, I still fell head over heels at the idea of a shiny new realistic looking Zelda game featuring Adult Link. But it was also a great time to have other games such as the Minish Cap to tide me over while I waited for it. We'll revisit Twilight Princess in my next segment, which will cover the years 2006 until 2010. Until then, it's back to our hosts.
All right, thank you for that, Shona. We'll see you next time for part 5. So, Peyton, apparently you weren't alive for half of this entire segment. And by segment, I mean 2001 to 2005, not you know, I wasn't talking to a prenatal Emperor P during the last half of this podcast.
I don't know, man. According to Cody, I'm consistently born like every 5 minutes. So, like, I get reborn every 5 minutes. So I don't know how that works.
So you're a science fiction anomaly.
That's what I keep hearing, honestly.
What were you even interested in before you found out about Zelda?
Believe it or not, my very first video game was The Wind Waker. I remember playing it as a wee child at the young age of 2. I could barely comprehend what was going on, so mostly I just ran around Outset Island in circles like an idiot, trying to figure out what was going on because I couldn't read and couldn't comprehend, you know, more than mash button real fast.
Did you have, like, siblings or something? Like, how do you have a GameCube and playing video games when you're 2?
So, believe it or not, my dad actually played video games. When he was in college, he had an SNES, and I think he had a SNES as well. He didn't have a 64, but by the time that I was a wee
Sorry,
child...
Did you not hear that?
I did not.
He had a Super NES, but he also had a SNES.
Did I say SNES and not NES?
Yeah.
Well.
Anyway.
But yes, so when I was a wee lad, a weird lad at least, my sisters were growing up playing the GameCube because my dad said, "Oh, look, an excuse to buy the GameCube for kids, definitely."
Ah, yes. Daughters.
It's for the girls, honey, I swear. By the time I was born and able to play the Wind Waker, because it came out in 2002 and 2003, I believe. I think it was 2003. It came out a year after I was born. And oh my god, I did not understand what the hell was going on.
That's fair. I mean, so at this point in my life, I think I skipped out on Oracle Season. I liked the Zelda franchise by this point, but it wasn't something where I had to have every single game. And, you know, I was at an age where I couldn't get every single game. And my parents were not really like... My parents were not big on video games, so I'm like the exact opposite. Like, they kind of grew up in that time frame where they played arcade games back in the 70s. And then when, like, the fall of video games happened, they just kind of were like, well, that was fun. And then they just kind of moved on with their lives. So they didn't really care for it, and they got a lot of, like, you know, "are video games killing your children" kind of, like, messages from the news. And so it was, my parents are, like, cautious with us around video games. They knew that they couldn't get away with not giving us video games, because by the time we, like, started playing, we were hooked.
It was too late.
It was too late, yeah. They had already killed us. But I think at this point, like, my brother had owned the two Oracles games, and I just wasn't that interested. I had Link's Awakening DX by then, but I just wasn't really, like, super jazzed about having to play two separate games in order to get the full story. Mm-hmm. So, and to this day, I still haven't played it, but I'm trying to make the attempt. I think with Link to the Past and Four Swords, I loved playing that, just because it was nice to have that portable version. A lot of the fixes that were made from the SNES version kind of exist there. And I think if they ever tried to redo Link to the Past in any kind of capacity, like, it'd be, I hope that they continue with those fixes moving forward. Four Swords, I think, was really great. I remember taking, like, a trip to Disney World, and I took my friend with me. And the only reason why I mentioned that is because, like, it was a last second decision. Like, my parents felt sorry for me because we were going for, like, something else, and they were like, "All right, you can bring a friend." So I asked one of my friends, like, "Do you want to go? We're leaving in, like, an hour." And the only reason why he was able to go is because his mom desperately needed him out of the house. But we both had Game Boy Advances, and I had the Link cable, so we played Four Swords, and I think managed to beat it just, like, sitting around one night and just playing through it. And it was probably some of the most fun I'd had, like, doing co-op, at least until Overcooked, which is, like, my absolute favorite co-op game in the world. But after that, I was grossly hooked on Wind Waker. I actually, you know, that was the first game I ever pre-ordered that came with the Zelda Ocarina of Time and Master Quest disc.
Mm.
So I luckily managed to get one of those. Now they're insanely expensive. But I do remember playing through it, and then, ironically, during that same Disney World trip, I lost my memory card. So we brought the GameCube with us. We brought our Game Boy Advances with us. And I think on our way back, I lost the memory card. So I had mostly done the Triforce pieces, and then I just couldn't. I had to start all over from scratch.
Yikes. That far in the game, that's like endgame. And in Wind Waker, that's like the original Wind Waker, that's a while.
Yeah, I was pretty much done with it. And, you know, as a kid, I think I was 12 or 13. I think I was 13 at this point. So, you know, I'm not like a pro capital G gamer. And so I finally got to that point trying to collect all the Triforce pieces. That took me like months. So, yeah, I was not a happy kid when I found out I could no longer find my old memory card.
We had a similar issue. So our disc, I don't know who it was, but someone had, like, gotten a tiny scratch on it. And we actually eventually got it clean. So it works now. But back then, there was about a 70% chance that when you would fight the Puppet Ganon, it would crash.
Mm-hmm. Puppet Ganon.
Yeah, just Puppet Ganon. Everywhere else, it would be fine. But you'd get to the third stage of Puppet Ganon, and if you beat Snake Ganon, it would crash without fail every time.
Jesus.
So it was the only part in the game that it had issues loading, running, anything at all. It was just Puppet Ganon Stage 3 that it would always crash. And it was crazy. Because for the longest time, even as a kid, I would get to that point and I would do my best. But it would just always crash without fail. So I actually didn't end up beating the Wind Waker for a very long time, even though I knew how it ended and knew, like, the full story.
Yeah. Well, I think I was so devastated by that. I don't think I ever really tried to make an attempt to beat it since. And mostly, the reason why I know how the game ends is because of the Hi, I'm Daisy comics. The King of Hyrule is a jerk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Four Swords Adventures I never bought until a few years ago. So I don't really have much to say, but I have seen a lot of Let's Plays that are fun. Have you played Four Swords Adventures?
I have not. I've seen Let's Plays that look very fun.
Wow. One of these days we may be able to get it working for Zyuthon, but it's a big pain in the butt.
I mean, listen, we only need 5 GameCubes, 4 Game Boy players.
Wait, why
4
5
GameCubes?
Game
because you have to have like a Master GameCube, and then you have to have the actual individual GameCubes. It's a nightmare.
That's what that sounds like. And at least, we don't need the Game Boy. Well, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. Yeah, that's what you're talking about. So, like, you would need the Game Boy players because those are the Game Boys that you are using in order to capture, right?
Yep. Exactly. So that's if you, like, would want to, like, capture the underground segments of the game.
Which I can't believe
that works.
Which is
only, like, a third of the game.
Because you would have to connect the Game Boy player to the other Game Boy controller, or the GameCube controller port, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. I've been offered a setup for it before. A friend of mine has a full setup for it that he set up before. And it's crazy, and he has the schematic somewhere. So,
well,
I've been offered
if you ever get that working, we don't have to play that, and then we can play Crystal Chronicles instead.
Hell yeah.
That's right. I'm not playing that remake. It's garbage.
Speaking
of Crystal Chronicles, The Legend of Zelda The Minish Cap. I mean, that's, yeah. I did play this one. I actually, I had a flash cart at the time. I was a bad boy.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was back when you had to use a printer port in order to connect your Game Boy Advance to your computer to make the transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the first and only time I ever used a computer's printer port.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily have, like, extremely fond memories of it. I think it had, like, the only Zelda dungeon puzzle that stumped me so much that I had to read a guide. And I feel like that was the only time where I was like, there's no way you could have known this without a guide. It was basically like I was just stuck in a dungeon, and it turns out one of the walls was bombable. But, like, unless you just checked every single wall in the dungeon, I didn't know how you were going to figure out, because it wasn't visibly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm looking for something that's, like, clearly obvious, like a crack or something. And it turns out either it was too camouflaged to see, or they just didn't do it. I'm not exactly sure which, and I don't know if any of our listeners, like, had the same issue and maybe know what I'm talking about.
I've got no idea what you're talking about, to be honest.
Yeah, anyway, so I just remember that being an issue, but otherwise, like, I did enjoy the game. And I didn't really try to fully beat it. It'd be nice to maybe play it again, but
yeah.
I also don't want to pay eBay prices for it.
Similarly to Wind Waker, I played this game when I was, like, very, very young. And I remember I only got past, like, the first two temples. I knew I beat the game at some point, but I only, like, could vividly remember the first two temples. And then just recently I went back and played it on our Twitch channel, Zelda Universe's Twitch channel, which I do a Tuesday night stream of. No plug.
Yeah, exactly.
Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock p.m. Central, 8 o'clock Eastern. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but yeah, I recently went and played it.
Twitch.tv/Universe TV.
We recently went and we played it on stream, And oh my god, like, the game's a lot of fun, but it's, like, really challenging in some places.
Yeah. I actually remember, and maybe this was just me being a lowercase g gamer, but I do remember the final boss being particularly difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't know what to do, I'd imagine that'd be, like, dumb hard. Good thing we have guides.
We're gonna move on to Randy's review of the Nintendo's E3 Direct. We'll listen to their thoughts, and then we'll kind of come back with some of ours.
Hello, and thank you for joining me once again. This is Randy Marr, here to talk about video games, specifically Nintendo's E3, which at the time of the recording was a few weeks ago, but that just means I've had some time to think about it. And just kind of going to give sort of an overall review, talk about what was good, what was bad, what worked, didn't work, that kind of stuff. Ultimately, I think it was a pretty good show, but we'll get into the details here. Of course, there was a lot of Zelda news here, and we'll definitely get to that stuff as well. But let's just go down the list, see what we got here. First, I just kind of want to go through some quick headline type stuff. You know, these things take up the majority of the Direct, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was bad. I just don't have a lot to say about a lot of this. Life is Strange Remastered and Life is Strange 2 Colors were shown. These were kind of already shown all over E3, it felt like. So I guess it wasn't surprising these are coming to Switch, but hey, it's good that they are. More people can check them out. I am all for more games being in more places. Whereas Guardians of the Galaxy games was shown, and I didn't like that they didn't show this like in the title or something, but this is a cloud version, meaning that this game is not running on your Switch. It's running on a server and it's being, you know, broadcast to your Switch. I have not had terrible success with cloud games on my Switch. Also, I might just recommend getting it on another system. We also saw Worms Rumble. Cool. More worms. I like worms. Two Point Campus, that was announced earlier in the show, but cool to see it's coming to Switch. Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania, pretty sure that was a new announcement, and even still, it's just sort of a remaster of the first three Monkey Balls. But you know what, those first three Monkey Balls are pretty good, so nice little update to the visuals, and then, you know, a new audience, and on the console you're currently playing. Astria Ascending, this was a kind of a weird quickie they went through. It looks kind of like a budget VanillaWare mobile game. VanillaWare, makers of Dragon's Crown and Odin Sphere. But honestly, I say that, but I actually really like the art style. You know, the animations look a little too much like it's made in Twine, but otherwise I like the art. Could be a cool little RPG. I'm going to keep an eye on that one. Just Dance 2022 is back, which is weird because it never left. It has been plaguing our souls for the better part of 15 years now, it feels like. Cruisin' Blast. I like cruising games. You know, Cruisin' USA on the Nintendo 64 is a classic. This one's all neon and shiny, so as long as it runs nice, you know, be happy to check that out. DBZ Kakarot. This is the complete version of a game that was not good on the consoles it came out for. Mario Golf Rush is out now, so I mean, whatever I think, doesn't really matter. You've probably played it by now. In fact, I've played it a little bit. It's good. It's a good game. If you like golf, if you like crazy golf. Monster Hunter Stories 2, I think that might be out now. I kind of lost track of that one again. They showed a lot of Monster Hunter at this C3, but it's out now. Who cares? Danganronpa Decadence Collection. I am not a Danganronpa guy, but I appreciate that these games are coming to Switch. I know they're real big on Vita, so it seems like a great one-to-one fit. They did announce like a new side game to this collection that's like a full Mario Party looking board game. So congratulations to the Nintendo Direct at E3 this year. You made me care about a Danganronpa game, so congrats. Fatal Frame, Maiden of Dark Water, there it is. There's your Wii U game on the Switch. It's kind of cheating because it's also coming to other stuff. Still hoping for that Xenoblade Chronicles X. Doom Eternal, The Ancient Gods. They showed an entire Doom trailer where he doesn't shoot anything with a gun. And that's impressive. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 plus 2. Cool. There's a game called Strange Brigade. Apparently it's on other systems or something. I've never heard of it. It looks interesting. Might check that out. Always looking for a good co-op game. Of course, at the start of the whole Direct, there was the announcement that Kazuya Mishima from Tekken is in Smash. That's great. Shout out to those Mii Fighter costumes. I think they're great. I love having Shantae, and I love even more that they included my favorite Shantae track in there. So, good. For me, the real big hitters are perhaps most people's, so probably not very different than yours. But I'm incredibly excited for Mario Party Superstars, kind of a best of collection of minigames stacked on some classic Mario Party maps from 1 through 3. I also want all of those first Mario Party maps. That game doesn't come out on Virtual Console. Nintendo has basically tried to hide the fact that that game existed for the weird quote-unquote controversy they got back in the 90s for the people's homes getting torn up because they don't know how to use the stick. Yeah, so hopefully we'll see more of those maps. And you know what? I'm always down for more Mario Party. That's it. Mario plus Rabbids, they only showed a brief trailer at the Direct, but they showed more of it back at Ubisoft's press conference video. I really like that first game. I like it a lot. I think it's just absolutely charming. I liked the XCOM Lite gameplay. And you know what? I'm an idiot. I like the Rabbids. It's my fault that they keep making these things. But yeah, so the trailer for this new one looks even better. Rabbid Rosalina looks delightful. Up until the rest of Nintendo's press conference, that was my kind of game of the show. I really liked that first one a lot. I know how there's a lot of talk about how Metroid Dread is the first new 2D Metroid game in 19 years, and that's cool. But WarioWare Get It Together is the first proper WarioWare game we've had since 2006. Everything since then has been like weird offshoots. The one on the Wii U wasn't a WarioWare. It was just games that had Wario in them. WarioWare is classically micro games, and those haven't been seen since Smooth Moves on the Wii. It's one of my favorite of Nintendo's series. I'm really happy to see it coming back, so go play it. Advance Wars Reboot Camp is a very good name for a very good remake that I am very excited for, verily. I would like new Advance Wars, but if this is what it takes to get to there, I'm okay with that. I do kind of like how it looks, like the board looks like it's just this big wooden kind of playset that you got the stuff all on top of. I think it's cute. And you know, if they're going to keep remaking them, I really hope we get those DS games. Those were incredible, and I would like to see those. Of course, I would prefer new, but you know, take what we can get. We finally got a look at Shin Megami Tensei 5 in action. I think it looks spectacular. Seeing demons kind of all on their own out on the world map and not just like weird blocky things, I think looks great. It's a great sense of scale those games haven't had. The main character's other world type form looks fantastic. There's just this big neon wavy design in the middle of a dead desert covered world. And I think it looks great. It's a great contrast, makes the character stand out so much. I've been excited at the idea of a Shin Megami Tensei 5 since it was announced over 4 years ago at that Switch announcement event. And finally seeing it in action and not just teasers, I'm happy that's coming out later this year. You know, I'm sure the rest of this podcast has been all about Zelda stuff. Just to recap some of my favorite things, that Age of Calamity DLC trailer was great. I loved seeing Zelda go all Akira on people. And those Guardian Leg Chucks, I mean, they show off very nicely. They look great in action. The DLC has actually been out. I actually finished most of it. And in my opinion, it's fun. And I mean, anything is a good excuse to go play that game again. I really like those Hyrule Warriors. The motorcycle, the leg chucks, and the new character are all fun as heck. So highly recommend it. You know, and someone else has probably talked about this too, we're not getting much of a Zelda celebration for the 35th anniversary, but I'll say it doesn't surprise me. You know, of course it's a bummer, but I'm willing to bet our good friend COVID helped kick any plans that there might have been down into a gutter. Still, happy to see that Zelda Game & Watch kind of hoping it would be a replica of like the actual original Zelda Game & Watch. Go look that thing up if you haven't. It's the original dual screen Nintendo console. But, you know, this one just kind of looks like that same typical Game & Watch design. Looks like the Mario one that came out last year. You know, I was kind of lukewarm on it with what they had announced, you know, the original Zelda Link Adventure. But when they showed Link's Awakening, I was in because A, Link's Awakening is a fantastic Zelda. B, it's the original version. The only version you can get officially through Nintendo right now is the remake, obviously. But then DX is the one that's being sold on the virtual console for 3DS. So seeing that it's the original, very happy to see that. Very excited to check that out. And always looking for another stupid excuse to play Link's Awakening. I love that game. Of course, we finally got a look at the sequel to Breath of the Wild. Looks great. It looks great. You know, so far it looks like everything I would want out of a Breath of the Wild sequel. We're in the sky now, we're possibly doing some underground stuff, new tools, that whole weird arm looks cool, and it's going to be a more fun story. Hopefully the current champions play a big role in it. Obviously, we haven't seen much at all story-wise, but we'll get there. You know, and sometimes with Nintendo, it takes a couple of proper trailers before they reveal, quote, the big thing that really kind of makes the game like a must-have. It's coming out next year, though, so get your waiting pants on because we're going to be here. For me, the absolute gold crown achievement of E3 goes to Metroid Dread. I'm a huge Metroid fan. I'm sure Elias has probably already talked about this or will talk about this for himself, but I just love we're getting a new 2D Metroid game. But yeah. Love the new look. That is my favorite Samus armor already. I love that they called it Dread, a name they never officially acknowledged other than like an Easter egg in Metroid Prime 3. But it was sort of that code name that enough basic reporting from IGN's Matt Casmasina at the time. We all knew this was a thing. We all knew Metroid Dread was a name. It was a game supposed to be on DS, but it was never officially announced. So you can't really say it was officially canceled, but it definitely quietly got shuffled back off. Apparently, according to the little interview with the director, it was supposed to come back at one point, but they again shelved that as well. So here we are now. Mercury Stream is the team who did Samus Returns, and they're the team working on this. And it looks like they're going to make Dread what it was originally envisioned to be 17 years ago. They could have called it anything else. I guess if calling it Dread, it is still the same ideas that Sakamoto-san had with the original. But, you know, they could have named it anything. I'm a massive nerd. I'm just over the moon over Metroid Dread. And it's coming out this year. This year. That's crazy. I can't believe it. I love it. I think this is one of the best E3 showings Nintendo's had since the Switch's first year in 2017. There's a number of big hits to be excited for with Zelda, Shin Megami Tensei V, Metroid. Only Metroid was the new announcement, but we hadn't seen anything of those other two I mentioned. Plus, just like a lot of small wins for like WarioWare, Advance Wars Reboot Camp, and the Danganronpa series. The only real dud in this whole presentation for me was that Dragon Ball Z game, which is just, we know what that game is, and it's bad. And now it's on a system less powerful than the ones it was made for, so like, how can that be good? But honestly, this is like the sentiment for all of this E3, right? Like, a lot of stuff was really cool, even though a lot of it was known quantities and obvious things. Microsoft had especially strong showing with games like Atomic Hearts and the Zelda-like Tunic, that Yukiden Chronicles game, all that Game Pass stuff. Ubisoft announced that Mario & Rabbids game, but had some neat other projects. It seems like it was a weaker year compared to a lot, and I think it was. The reason I say this is one of the better years I've seen in a while is because the highs are still really high, but also I was expecting this year to be nothing. You know, after the year we just had, everyone had with COVID, projects getting pushed back, I really thought this year was going to be just nothing. And it turns out there's more games I'm excited for here than most E3 showings overall. And Nintendo especially having the biggest ones. I guess I'm just happy to see games are still looking great. Games are good. It's the best time ever, even with COVID happening. Video games are the best. So I hope you enjoyed the E3 stuff. I look forward to, you know, what's coming out next year. The next few years looking great. Switch doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon. And I am just excited. But with that, I think I have talked long enough about Nintendo's press conference here, so I will go ahead and hand it back off to the hosts. Thank you again for listening, and take care of yourselves out there.
Man, look at all the Zelda we got. All that Zelda we got at E3. It's great. I can't wait for Twilight Princess and the Wind Waker and Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. When they announced that for the Switch, I went haywire. Like, I was crying. It was ugly. Man, it was just ugly crying. It was terrible.
Well, I saw the real E3, and I was extremely happy that we're getting a Game & Watch. So, touche. Honestly speaking, like, you know, I'm sure that it's of no surprise to anybody listening to this podcast that Nintendo's been extremely awkward in terms of celebrating Zelda's 35th. And I think that comes from a place of Nintendo's always been kind of awkward about celebrating Zelda's anniversaries. I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, like, when I think it was the Mario 25th anniversary, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was that anniversary that had the Wii, the red Wii, with Super Mario All-Stars Collection, and, like, you know, they kind of rolled out the red carpet as they usually do. And then with Zelda, they're like, here's a concert. And, you know, not to say, like, one is better or worse than the other, but I think the expectations are, like, super different between the two anniversaries, because especially with Mario's 35th, like, they started in April and they just wouldn't stop.
They did not let up.
No, it was an event. It was a year-long event. And, you know, with understanding COVID, with understanding the pandemic and everything that's happened over the year, it is still, I think, a little like, you kind of wonder what hopes or plans Nintendo may have had in the first place with the Zelda 35th. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of moving over to back to Pokemon, like, their 25th anniversary has been super awkward. And again, people aren't really sure what kind of place that's coming from. How do you feel about what Nintendo's been up to in terms of their E3 presentation as well as, like, their 35th anniversary?
I don't know. I think what we got, in all honesty, was really good. I think they gave us stuff that was well at least needed for the franchise. But, yeah. Like, I get that Mario's the flagship title. Like, when you think of Nintendo, the first thing you probably think of is Mario and Bowser and all of them. So it makes sense that they'd go, like, super always above and beyond. But I think that Zelda as a whole is also pretty high up there when it comes to the things people think of.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like if Mario is number one, Zelda usually is number two.
Yeah. Like, I feel like they treat our poor boy a little too harshly.
Like I said, when it came to the concert, they specifically said they wanted to celebrate Zelda in a different way than with Mario. But I also feel like in that case, you know, maybe in the 25th and the 20th anniversaries, et cetera, like, it wasn't that big of a difference. It's like, okay, here's a game collection that originally came out on the Super Nintendo. Here's, like, a red Wii that otherwise does not look like Mario. It's just red. And then when you compare that between that and, like, Zelda getting a concert, you know, tour, like, okay, it's different. It's celebratory in its own way. But I think just looking at the 35th anniversary and just, like, what such a big deal they made out of the Mario 35th anniversary, and kind of, like, it's not even just the fact that they are not doing anything, but it's also the fact that they're not really saying much either. There's no, you know, marketing being done for it. There's no, like, Zelda 35th, you know, the one that keeps getting passed around is the one that we made. So, like, that's insane to think about. I think in terms of what we got for E3, I was pleased that it couldn't, you know, that we got what we got at all. You know, I honestly wasn't expecting a trailer for Breath of the Wild 2. I just wasn't. Let alone the fact that it would have a subtitle. Like, at least I was right on about that, but for different reasons. I'm not even kidding. I was honestly, like, kind of shocked in a positive way to see that the Game & Watch was happening, because I thought that the Mario Game & Watch was super cool. It does what it needs to do, and it does it really well. I think a Zelda one would be really cool to have, and the fact that they put three actual full-size Zelda games on it, despite the fact, you know, that they're smaller in memory because they're tiny little NES and Game Boy games. But just to have all those in one package was really kind of cool and not expected.
I can definitely agree with that. I think the Game & Watch is cool, but for me as well, I'm not a biggest fan of Zelda 1, 2, and I haven't played Link's Awakening in a long time. So it's just something that doesn't really appeal to me personally, as I've always been a bigger fan of the 3D stuff. Mm-hmm. But like then you look over at what the... And I will say, Metroid fans deserved it. They deserved a win. But I feel like they got a more like satisfying anniversary than we did.
I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, yeah, then that's the other thing to point out. It is an anniversary year for Metroid as well and Kid Icarus. But the fact that like not only are they releasing a new Metroid game, one that has kind of been in the books for over a decade, I think, at this point. But also the fact that the new Switch OLED that got announced afterwards is kind of thematic with Metroid Dread. With the black and the white colors kind of almost looking like the EMMI reminiscent of it. I kind of agree with you there. They have a lot of franchises that they kind of have to acknowledge, and each franchise has its own very passionate fan base. So for everyone to kind of come at Nintendo and be like, you know, why didn't you talk about this game? Why aren't you doing enough for this franchise? Like, everyone kind of wants to have that moment in the sun. So it's unfortunate that, you know, Nintendo can't do more for all their franchises, including Zelda. Mm-hmm. But at least it makes sense.
Yeah, I get it.
Let's move over to the Zelda realm, where they are going to deconstruct the 2021 Breath of the Wild sequel trailer. And then, you know, we will similarly pretend to do the same thing.
Agreed.
Hey, you guys, we haven't talked in a while and we got some exciting news in the Zelda realm. Welcome, you guys. I am Anne.
And I am Realm.
And we are going to be talking about Breath of the Wild 2, the E3 trailer. We ended up getting some exciting stuff. What do you think about it, Realm?
Wow. I mean, some people are a little bit disappointed that we didn't get a title and that, you know, we don't know everything about the game. But honestly, I find it difficult not to be pretty happy with what we've gotten. And this just increases my excitement for the game exponentially.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I won't lie. I did not expect quite a bit of the stuff that was shown. I actually ended up writing a few of my own predictions of what we might be getting in the trailer, and I was way off. I was way off. Actually, I ended up putting on my little list that possibly Zelda can be a companion, or maybe we'll get like an animal companion. I was kind of thinking that we would get an explanation why we're in the cave, maybe some underwater exploration. And maybe possibly dungeons? Well, that could still be a possibility, but it did not show anything like that. The only thing I got slightly right was that we would have more lands to explore. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. I think the very interesting thing about this trailer is that it really didn't answer any of the questions that were raised by the first trailer. And just added even more questions on top of that. And so, like, you know, honestly, in some cases with dungeons and stuff, we could have maybe seen that. We just don't really exactly know what we're looking at in a lot of cases here.
Oh, yeah. It was just an interesting trailer just in general. We ended up getting a lot of different kinds of things that kind of like what I said, just was I was not expecting at all. But I won't lie, I think it was kind of interesting the similarities dealing with Skyward Sword compared to this trailer. What do you think about that?
I think that was actually something that's very interesting. And it kind of reminds me of how before Breath of the Wild came out, about a year before that, we got Twilight Princess HD. And it's kind of looking like now we're going to get Skyward Sword HD roughly the same amount of time prior to the sequel to Breath of the Wild. And I remember when Twilight Princess HD was just coming out that Aonuma said something along the lines of, you might want to play this before you play Breath of the Wild, because, you know, there will be maybe some interesting connections. And I think it's a little bit up for debate what that actually meant and how much those connections were actually there. But I think in this case, we are seeing those kinds of connections, and it's much more than just kind of obscure things. Like, this seems very interestingly linked to Skyward Sword in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we've got a bunch of different kinds of similarities dealing with Skyward Sword. But also, we ended up seeing a few things dealing with Link. At the beginning of the trailer, we ended up seeing like Link getting infected with something on his arm, and it ended up giving him some new abilities. What do you think about that?
Okay, so these abilities are very interesting, and I think specifically Link in this trailer is very interesting. Now, we have gotten... There's been a lot of discussion online I've been seeing about, you know, whether or not the character with longer hair we see is actually Link. I think it very much is. He has the arm that we see him get infected with earlier in the trailer. It seems like it's definitely him, but it is interesting that we kind of see two different Links throughout the trailer. One who looks a lot like what we remember from the original Breath of the Wild, and one who has that longer hair and that different outfit. And one of the abilities, to your question, that we saw that I thought was very interesting was what kind of seems like the upgraded or slightly different version of Stasis that seems to send objects back in time. And a theme we kind of saw a little bit throughout this trailer was things relating to time. Specifically with that, later in the trailer, just a couple seconds later, actually, we see a drop of water fall in reverse. And that has got me thinking a little bit. And one of the things it's gotten me thinking about is the fact that that longer-haired Link kind of looks a little bit like the Link that we see in the Tapestry in Breath of the Wild, referring to the ancient hero.
I did not think of that. That's actually a really good point there. And kind of speaking of time, I will fully admit I've read some things about it, but I didn't really see the correlation with time with Link until you ended up mentioning that. I'll perfectly be honest. And I totally forgot about that raindrop that ended up, kind of like what you said, ended up going backwards in time. I was kind of thinking it was more, well, things just going up in the air, like gravity ended up just basically just disappearing for a moment. But time, that is actually an interesting concept. We could definitely, I don't know, maybe we could have like, not quite like a split in time, like maybe Link can go back and forth into time. That's why we have two different Links. Maybe that's a possibility. I don't know. I will fully admit, I did not even think about something like that. That is kind of interesting for bringing that up.
Yeah, I think that you might be onto something there with the actually being able to go back and forth, because one of the things about like what that drop made me think of was how when you're getting a new part of your map added or getting a new rune in the original game, the drop will drop down from either the Sheikah Tower or the kind of device hanging above the place you can put your slate in the shrine. The droplet will drop down. And so I do wonder if that what we're seeing there is maybe the device that lets you travel somehow. I'm not sure.
Maybe that definitely could be a possibility. Like, with his arm being infected, we could definitely, like, I don't know, maybe he has, like, a new ability that we just haven't, quote-unquote, seen yet, where he could actually, well, we did see the whole thing with the stasis, kind of like what you ended up mentioning, but maybe he has the ability of being able to go back in time and forward in time, like back and forth or something like that with his infected arm. I guess we'll just have to see a little bit more with this whole concept so we can actually figure out what's going on here. But also with other stuff that's, well, to kind of give you guys a little bit of a heads up, we're going to be splitting this into multiple episodes so we can talk a little bit more. We're kind of giving a, I guess, summary of what happened in the episode or in the trailer that we ended up seeing. But we'll definitely go way more into this in next episodes. We'll split it into like one where we're just talking about Skyward Sword, one we'll talk about the infected arm and things like that. But next thing I kind of noticed, kind of like what you were talking about back a little bit while ago with his new look and his wavy hair, I kind of noticed that he ended up getting a new equipment, like this flamethrower thing. He was attacking this plant that was hanging from the ceiling, and he was holding onto his other arm that's not infected, where it's almost like, it looks like a dragon kind of shield looking thing, and he's like throwing fire at this plant. What do you think of that? It looks like we're going to be getting new equipment too.
Yeah, so this is a very interesting thing to me. And honestly, what I think it means is that we are seeing in some way the return of dungeon items, is my prediction. It's possible that it's not, but this seems like a very kind of unique weapon that doesn't, it doesn't seem kind of generic in the way a lot of Breath of the Wild's weapons were. And maybe it could just be an especially powerful one, but I don't know. It seems very unique in a way that might mean it's a dungeon item. Now, I don't know how they would actually handle that, because it seems like they're kind of resistant to giving you any weapons that don't kind of degrade over time and eventually break. But, you know, the Master Sword was in the first game and it didn't break. So maybe if this is a dungeon item, it could work in a similar way that you can use it a number of times and then it'll become kind of unavailable. Or maybe we will see the return of a magic meter or something, which will kind of put a cap on how much you can use this kind of item.
Yeah, maybe we can definitely get a magic meter back. Yeah, that would be kind of interesting. I don't know, just by the look of the item that was in that little part of the trailer, it definitely looks like we can only maybe use it a few times. I certainly hope it's not like in Twilight Princess where we can only use it in like a certain dungeon like it was with the spinner. But maybe possibly, like kind of like what you said, we'll get like a magic meter and we can only use the magic, quote unquote, of the fire to the point where it ends up becoming empty. Yeah, personally, I hope that, I know this is kind of sad, but I kind of hope we don't get breakable weapons again, or at least maybe possibly be able to upgrade weapons. But yeah, we'll just have to see with that. But there is one thing dealing with these new weapons. We definitely did see a new shield that was in the trailer while he was kind of wearing that kind of scruffy outfit. I kind of noticed that at the beginning when he was falling and his hair was undone and he had like this new outfit that was kind of old and ruined, there was no Master Sword or a Champion's Tunic. It was like, it was gone. So I'm wondering what in the world happened to the Master Sword.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's very interesting because we don't see Link having it even when he is dressed like he was, well, more like he was in Breath of the Wild in that Champion's Tunic. So I really wonder where that has gone. Maybe it disappeared in the same scene we see Zelda get taken away. I actually can't recall, though, in the first trailer if he had the Master Sword. He might not have. So I'm interested in maybe where that went. I guess also with that scene, it's a big question, like, with that Link who has the shield with the Sheikah symbols, like, There's a lot of open questions there. Specifically, you know, there's the cool falling scene, but like, where is he even coming from in that? Is there somewhere like significantly higher than those other islands we've seen? Because like on most of them, it seems like they're kind of, maybe not all roughly the same elevation, but they're kind of close together. That seems like really far away from them. But maybe with the Master Sword, they put it in the Lost Woods again, possibly? I'm not sure. What do you think?
I am not entirely sure either. I'm kind of thinking that in the when he ends up getting infected, like possibly he ended up getting his sword taken away. And he was kind of, while everything ended up getting all lifted up into the sky, he was kind of thrown up. He ended up going with the whole lands, and he ended up getting thrown up. And that's why he was kind of all tattered with a new outfit in a way. I'm still kind of confused myself. And that's why I'm kind of thinking with what you ended up bringing up in a little bit a while ago, maybe it's dealing with time.
Yeah.
Maybe he ended up going through time just like right when he ends up getting infected, and that's where the Master Sword ends up disappearing and we got to go find it again. I have no idea. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Here's a question for you, actually. Where do you think that these islands are? Like, do you think that they're covering most of Hyrule, or do you think they're in a very specific area? Because I'm kind of scrubbing back through the trailer, and it seems like every case that we see these islands, they're all, or at least where there's an identifiable location, they're all in Hebra. They're all right above that area with the large mushrooms where the tower is, roughly, in the original game. And I'm not sure we ever see them in like any place that's identifiably not there. So do you think that we're going to see them everywhere, or maybe some other kinds of unique things in other areas?
I'm kind of thinking, just from what it looked like it was just in Hyrule Field, and it didn't really look like it was specifically in any other place except for right around in that area. It kind of, in a way, it kind of looked like with everything, like all the lands coming up, it could have possibly ruined some of the lands, so it kind of makes the land a little bit different. But I don't know. For me, it kind of looks like it was just in that area. I don't think it was in anywhere else, but we didn't really see much.
Yeah, we got a very limited look.
Before we were getting actually fairly close on time, there's one other thing that was kind of new that we ended up seeing. We ended up seeing some new enemies and some revamped of old enemies. We ended up getting that one green brick looking machine with like, it kind of looked like it had some Yiga symbols on it. We also ended up getting some old enemies, but they were on top of a stone talus. It looked like they were building on top of a stone talus. What do you think of the new enemies that we've been getting and old enemies?
Well, so first of all, I am very excited about that kind of green statue monster. I'm not really certain what to make of that. It's got a very interesting kind of symbol on its lower half that I can't really make out. But you're right that it does seem Yiga almost, or that it does have those Sheikah symbols. But I'm really happy because that looks super cool. I do think it looks unique enough that it might be a boss, or maybe an overworld boss like a stone talus. But it's definitely on one of those islands. So that's interesting. And I am so happy about the Bokoblin Fort on the Stone Talus, because I do think that Breath of the Wild had some limited interactions between enemies, like how moblins will sometimes pick up Bokoblins to throw them. But I think that seeing the kind of enemies remixed and put together is really cool. I do hope we get more enemy variety in Hyrule, not just the new areas, though, as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I kind of noticed that with like the moblins, and I couldn't really see it. Well, maybe I just missed it, but definitely the moblins, it looks like they are a little bit more beefy And quite a bit of like the littler enemies, they look like they've been upgraded almost. So I'm wondering if they're going to be harder to defeat. I don't know. That's just a feeling that I've been having, and kind of when I was rewatching the video over and over and over again, that it looks like we might actually get stronger enemies.
Yeah, and I think that would be cool. And I also wonder though if maybe they're just a slightly kind of varied version. I do think that in that one part where the ball is rolling back up the hill, we see that one of the Moblins is actually wearing a helmet, which is interesting. And it seems like the one in the background there is also wearing one. So it does seem like maybe the enemies are actually going to be a little bit harder. And I wonder if that's going to be a late game thing, though, or if it's just going to be from the get-go.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to see. But yeah, just personally for me, they look beefier. They look more... Well, a few of them had like huge, humongous horns on top of their heads. And yeah, just like what you mentioned, I totally spaced on that. Yeah, some of them actually do have armor. So I don't know. Maybe the enemies will be a little bit, well, more strategic. And they have more strategy to how they're going to be defeating us. I mean, they're on top of Stone Talus now.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we are at the end of this episode. I certainly hope you guys have enjoyed this. Just like I said, we're going to be splitting this into several different episodes because we've got a lot to talk about. And also, we'll definitely be talking about this trailer and the previous trailer. We'll definitely kind of combine them both and just talk about Breath of the Wild 2 before it ends up coming out in 2022. Holy crap.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, fingers crossed. But anyway, hopefully you guys have enjoyed this. The awesome The Zelda Realm. I am Anne.
And I am Realm.
And we will see you soon.
Bye.
Thank you for that, Realm and Anne. Wonderful as always. I'm on the fence about this one, to be honest. I don't feel it, man. Like, I saw the sequel trailer, and it's like everyone's expecting. I think I'm just getting it early. Breath of the Wild sequel is not going to be Breath of the Wild, you know? It never will be. I feel like a lot of people, including myself, are going in with those expectations of the sequel is going to be better than Breath of the Wild, if not already Breath of the Wild, but better. And I'm like, that sequel
that's
was
a hell
just,
of a sentence.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm just sitting here thinking, that trailer was only... all right, in my mind.
I mean, there's a couple of things to unpack, and really, people are trying to figure out whether or not this will either be as good or better, and it really depends on how you look at Breath of the Wild. I have a lot of friends that don't necessarily like the original Breath of the Wild, and it's not their favorite Zelda game because the story just isn't there, according to them. Like, there is a story, but the fact that it is, like, patched in very specific places and it's not necessarily driven by its story, which I don't really see how you can and can't do based off of an open world game. It's unfortunate that like that's kind of what they're going to look at, and what they're really looking for Breath of the Wild 2 to do is to go back to, you know, the Ocarina of Time, Twilight Princess, Wind Waker, like model of, you're very driven by the story. The story is what, the plot is the most important thing there. And it's not like kind of piecemeal given to you through finding things or by going to certain places at a certain time. Mm-hmm. And really being driven forward by that plot. That apparently is like, to them would be Zelda Breath of the Wild 2 being better than Breath of the Wild 1. Not having the shrines and instead of having full actual dungeons, I think is kind of on most people's wish lists, including mine.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the trailer and how this kind of juxtaposes itself with Skyward Sword, of all things.
Yeah, I thought that was incredibly interesting, the concept of going back to the sky. I hadn't heard a whole lot of people talking about that. I thought most people were saying, you know, we're going underground, and we might have some of that. I heard a lot more people saying, yeah, this game's going to be like almost completely underground, more than, no, we're going literally into the sky.
I think having a more underground Zelda would have not benefited it. It would have... The main draw of Zelda is its landscape and being able to, or especially Breath of the Wild. Like, everyone likes to have those pictures or screenshots or those, like, panoramic views of just seeing everything out in the distance and seeing the sky and seeing all these colors come together, and by kind of forcing yourself, unless they're, like, a land of the lost inside of their earth where they, like, maybe that's where he's falling. Like, if he goes after Zelda and then you find out there's, like, something underneath the world of Hyrule, that's the only other thing I could think of. But... I mean, I guess that kind of remains to be seen. The fact that the castle lifts itself from the ground, even in the first trailer, to me, like, I'm kind of interpreting that as there's a need to kind of put the world back to what it was. That's such an anime, like, evil villain plot of certain, like, Tales of games, where it's like, I'm going to return the world back to its former ways for some evil reason.
Link's the bad guy in this game?
No, not necessarily. Usually it's something like, if I return the world back to where it was, I can destroy it better.
Oh, right. That, yeah. You know, that makes sense. Of course.
Yeah. Let's merge the two worlds. And that's only under the guise that Skyward Sword is being the first game in the timeline. But as we kind of know already, Breath of the Wild doesn't exist on the timeline. It's put away in its own little corner. And so Breath of the Wild 2 will only kind of nod to certain things and characters and places from other games, but it's not like it's actually in any particular world or any particular timeline.
That's fair.
So, unfortunately for me, it's kind of like this is kind of my, you know, my weakness. I'm not very good at, like, looking at trailers and going, like, I'm going to super dissect these. I feel That's a job for Game Explain.
Well, another thing that has me concerned is like, short term, you know, this is great. The Zelda formula we're operating with is great. But, like, what's the plan, like, 2 to 3 games from now? Like, how often are they going to reuse Hyrule before they know they got to switch it up? And when they switch it up, what are they going to do?
Well, and I think that's the issue, is that why we're going into the sky, why we have to change the map, because I can't think of a lot of games that, especially open world games, where the sequel takes place in the exact same place as the previous one. Yeah. Usually, like, my thought of a sequel to Breath of the Wild 2, if they were going to do it directly, was they go to another kingdom, they go to another place. Maybe like another dimension, like they have to change the map drastically in some way. And I think that this idea of having a sky world and a below, you know, a ground world would be their way of doing that. Cause I don't really see how you expand the map unless you just make it horribly big. And how are you going to traverse that world if you've made it way too big and it just becomes cumbersome?
I don't know. I feel like they've messed with the open world formula. I feel like they've got, like, maybe they could do one or two more. No, I think only one more game, like, in the same world. And then they'd have to figure out what they're doing from there.
Well, it's not super often we get a direct sequel like this. I can think of a few cases where they have used the same Link. I mean, Zelda 1 and 2 uses the same hero, if I remember correctly, or I could be wrong about that, and, you know, you can tell me I'm wrong in the comments. But it's not often that they decide to use the same hero of Hyrule, not terribly. So to me this is kind of breaking not often treaded ground. Oh no, I guess they kind of use it with, like, the Oracle's games and then Link's Awakening. That, as far as I know, that's the same Link.
But even then, it's still, like, a completely different map, a completely different world in those games.
Yeah, exactly. And so I agree with you. I'm honestly surprised that they went with a direct sequel. I honestly didn't think it needed one. So there's that as well. Really, I think even just Age of Calamity does a lot more to expand or do whatever to the story that people say it does. So, I'm surprised that they're spending a lot of time in this particular version of Hyrule.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just generally concerned about the quality compared to Breath of the Wild. Because Breath of the Wild is not my favorite Zelda by a little bit. It's a very, very good 3D Zelda. But even for a game that's very much built to be like, yeah, let's go play this game for, 30 minutes. It's not my first choice when it comes to Zelda games.
Yeah, I think my personal issue with Breath of the Wild is that it's not a game that I would be like, man, I just want to like go back and play something that I've already played. What's that game going to be like?
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to think of something much shorter. And it's an issue I have with almost every game made over the last 15 years. The fact that we kind of have emphasized open world games means that even games with very quick plots can take maybe 60 to 100 hours. And that used to be a time frame reserved for JRPGs. I just can't see myself honestly wanting to go back and play another 60 to 100 hour game unless I hadn't played it in like 10 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Or it gets re-released in some fashion. So Breath of the Wild is not a Zelda game that I'm like itching to replay, whereas I've replayed a lot of the older ones dozens of times.
You don't want to collect the 1800 Korok seeds? It's now doubled since it's the sequel.
More poop. Aonuma heard your pleas.
All right. Well, next up, we have Piece of Heart with Connor, where he'll be discussing the Master Sword. Take it away, Connor.
They say that you never forget your first time. Your first relationship, your first big success or victory, your first, well, anything really. Regardless of what that thing is, your first time, whether it goes good or bad, sets the stage. It provides a baseline for how you interpret every repetition and every iteration of this thing that will follow your very first time. The Legend of Zelda is pretty much built on repetition. The themes are pretty consistent. The mechanics and general gameplay are formulaic now to the point that it's pretty much a meme. The main characters are pillars in the narrative, and a lot of the side characters are too. A lot of the side events and several inside jokes have lasted since the very beginning. A lot of what we consider the primary structure for The Legend of Zelda has been in existence since that original game on the NES. But it's the third installment, A Link to the Past, that truly provided the environment and lore that set the Zelda franchise on the path it's followed ever since. It's pretty much what cemented, if not established completely, what we generally call the Zelda formula, and provided a lot of the mainstays for the franchise. Most important, and most recognizable, is the legendary Master Sword. And while it's true that you never forget your first, there's still something particularly special about how A Link to the Past introduces what would become, aside from perhaps her namesake, the most iconic and the most important part of the series. My name is Connor Schultz, and this is Piece of Heart. I was going over the series a little while ago, and I realized something interesting regarding the Master Sword. Very rarely is the Master Sword given any kind of real build-up or introduction. In Ocarina of Time, there is literally zero mention of it until you open the doors in the Temple of Time, and it's just there. Navi identifies the sword, and you go pick it up. In Twilight Princess, Zelda tells you about it right before you go and get it. Very useful, considering the situation you're in, but it's just, you need it, so you go get it. Skyward Sword is a unique situation here, because you're building it. You spend about a third of the game literally forging the Master Sword, and yet, through the entire process, it's not really described as if you're making some kind of legendary weapon. it's framed instead much more like you need to build yourself, as if the actual source of power was resting in Link, rather than in this magical blade that we are in the process of creating. A Link Between Worlds is the only other game that gives the Master Sword any major kind of introduction. But when it does, it treats the sword more like a historical artifact than it does necessarily a legendary weapon. Breath of the Wild, I think, is the only other game that gives the sword any kind of reverence. And partially because it doesn't strictly name the Master Sword until you get it, but instead it's called the Sword That Seals the Darkness. There's something about that longer title and the way it's framed that gives it a bit more awe, gravitas. With A Link to the Past, as soon as you rescue Zelda, the Master Sword becomes your sole focus. Even though the game is centered on the Triforce, for that first section of the game, your goal is to obtain the Master Sword. Once Zelda is safe in the Sanctuary, she sets you on the path to get this legendary sword, her words, as the only way to fight this evil wizard that has taken over the country. From there, every major character focuses you on the Master Sword, and every single one of them describes this blade as a legendary, sacred artifact, a mighty blade forged against those with evil hearts, the sword of evil's bane. And connected with it is the tale of the Royal Knights of Hyrule, who are given a position similar to legendary warriors who protected the ancient sages as they sealed the Triforce and the Sacred Realm from the rest of the world. That kind of awe, that kind of reverence for this blade, I think, enhances what you are trying to do and really helps to give the aura that surrounds the Lost Woods as you finally obtain all three pendants and go after what is, at this point, your main goal. The Lost Woods themselves have always been one of my favorite locations in Zelda, particularly in this game. There's something about the aura that surrounds this place. The perpetual fog that has fallen over these woods. The music in particular, very unique in this series, gives the Lost Woods an otherworldly feeling, as if you've wandered into something mystical and mysterious. Not necessarily getting lost, so much as getting drawn in. Another fun touch that I really enjoy about this place is the fact that there are duplicates. False Master Swords are scattered all over these woods, as if they're trying to distract you or perhaps appease the soul of a would-be adventurer who just wants to get something rare or valuable from these woods. And then, you find it. A very large grove, with animals running through, giving this place a peaceful atmosphere, despite still being surrounded by fog and music. And when you see it, there's no question that you found what you were looking for. A massive dais, a distinctive pedestal, and a description. The hero's triumph on Cataclysm's Eve wins three symbols of virtue. The Master Sword he will then retrieve, keeping the knight's line true. This drawing of the Master Sword has always been my favorite. The way the music is played, the pendants rising above you and glowing with mystical power, and the drawing of the blade itself dispersing the fog, in some ways breaking the spell that had held this place captive, bringing you and the blade together and back into this world. And with this shining sword, we are then ready to move on in our quest, creating a bond that would last, for us, decades. For Link, centuries. And for me, always residing in a piece of my heart. My name is Connor Schultz, and this has been Piece of Heart. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for that, Connor. A wonderful exposition over the Master Sword and Link to the Past. It's a shame it was over A Link to the Past, though. A Link to the Past is just boring. It's not good. I will stand by this. Like, it's not... It's okay, hang on.
Well, no, hold it's on, not hold the, on. I just... I got... Mm. Flashing news. It's like, breaking news. This is down from the grapevine. I got it right in my hands. I got the ticker tape reeling. You hate A Link to the Past?
Okay, I was rephrasing that exact thing. It's not that I hate A Link to the Past. I don't like it, but I don't necessarily dislike it either. It's been in this very neutral space in my head since I fully played through it about 4 months ago. If I have the option to play literally any other Zelda, why would I pick the most boring, bland Zelda there is?
Well, you wouldn't know it was boring or bland when you picked it up, I'm assuming. All right, well, let's go down the list. What games in the series have you played?
I've played them all except for the Oracle games. Right? As of right now, I've currently played them all except for the Oracle games.
Okay. Now, I feel like it's been on record multiple times that your favorite is Twilight Princess.
That is 100% correct.
So why is Twilight Princess your favorite? Like, what about it sets that, like, you know, tone for you?
It's kind of cheesy because I also speedrun the game, but I like the movement in it. I like the atmosphere. And when I say atmosphere, I mean, like, the dungeons and, like, the characters, at least how they are presented, as narrow as they can be at times. I do enjoy the cast that's in the game, except for Colin, because, really, I screw Colin. But
you do? But
I hate Colin so much.
Okay, Colin's, I just wanted to make sure you phrased that correctly.
Colin is the worst character in that game by a lot.
No, he is.
But
I feel like there's like an issue with Colin, and really it's just in playing it, it kind of is my issue with the rest of the game, or like the rest of the characterization of the game, mm-hmm. is that there's a lot of potential that just gets dropped. Like, Colin is supposed to be this character that's like afraid of everything, but because of Link, he gains the courage to do something, right? Like, mm-hmm. and you can almost wonder if had they kind of really spent some time with it, that you could have had like a courage, a wisdom, and a power NPC that's a main component of the story, so that they kind of like gain something from either Link's adventure or through somebody else in the story, so that they either like gain inner strength to do something, maybe they become an excellent like planner or something like that, like they're able to figure out their way out of something, which is wisdom, and then, you know, having the courage to stand up and, you know, protect people or the ones you love. Like, there's you've solved it?
I've solved it. So Colin's obviously courage, we've discussed. They could have given Colin courage.
Yeah.
You know, and then just because, I'm iffy on this one. We'll give Tallow wisdom, because Tallow learned to, like, coolest grill, you know? He's the watchtower man. He's no longer the aggressive, really, one. He's just the one that's, like, thinking about it, protecting the village, strategizing. And then, economic power. Malamar.
Yeah, Malo's power. Bam. I was either going to say Malo's either power or wisdom, because Malo actually would be a great wisdom, to be honest with you, because, like, you help him overthrow a store and it's now his. Like, that's a wisdom move right there.
Yeah.
And having it be like the children would have been a great idea, or a great way to kind of like push that, you know, through. But again, it like goes out to other characters like Ilya, and just the fact that like there are so many like character arcs that just kind of are like, okay, whatever. Go find the mirror pieces now. And you're just like, okay. Because everything, unfortunately, is a catalyst, or everything is just kind of, you know, confetti to the greater thing of just the Zelda formula. That's the only thing that's important in a lot of Zelda games, is just the formula. I don't really care how you make it work. Just do it.
The big thing that I people criticize that a lot, and I fully agree with the criticisms. Like, those side stories do get dropped very quickly. They're not very fulfilling. On the other hand, thinking back, I don't really see, other than games like Majora's Mask, where side characters have any kind of, you know, arc or feeling or meaning.
And I agree with that, because I feel like side characters have been Zelda's greatest weakness. Like, they might make very memorable side characters. They might make very, like, unique side characters. But overall, they don't really treat them with any real weight. They're just there to be of guidance to you and to be somebody that you talk to because, you know, Link is a silent protagonist. They need somebody to provide narration or provide guidance as to where to go next. And I would kind of say that, like, Majora's Mask does an extremely good job of making the side characters important. Skyward Sword, a little bit more in that direction, because at least they have a beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. But they're not important to the actual story like Majora's Mask they are. And then, like, Breath of the Wild kind of does that a little bit more. But, yeah, I would kind of say that they're... But going back to what we were originally talking about. So you think that, like, the atmosphere, the motions, the, you know, some of that stuff, that would be the reason why you rank Twilight Princess really high for you. So what makes a really bad Zelda experience for you then?
It's honestly the gameplay, the fluidity of gameplay for me. That's why I like a lot of 3D Zeldas more. Maybe I just prefer that style, but I've played 2D Zeldas and I definitely enjoy them. Like, I enjoy Spirit Tracks, I enjoy Link Between Worlds, I enjoy Link's Awakening, but just it just doesn't... Link to the Past just doesn't feel right gameplay-wise. Like, I can throw everything else out about a Zelda game if I've enjoyed the gameplay and I find the gameplay fun. And I just don't think A Link to the Past is very engaging gameplay. Mm-hmm. I think it's mostly just avoiding enemies, running away. You know, there's no really sense of power even when you get late game over the enemies. You don't feel stronger. You just feel like, oh, they gave the enemies a color swap and now they're stronger and now they'll hit me in 2 hits even when I have 20 hearts. Like, it just doesn't seem very fulfilling gameplay-wise for me.
Yeah, I think in that perspective, it's sort of like it's a puzzle to solve. You go into an area and the enemies are super tough. Therefore, you have to go find something in order to allow yourself to not die when you go back there. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a very old-timey understanding of JRPG concepts of you go into an area and the monsters are too strong and they kill you in 2 hits. So you shouldn't go in that direction. You're supposed to go in the other direction where the enemies don't kill you in 2 hits. And then once you're stronger, you can go back to that area and see if you don't die. And then if you don't, then you can proceed forward until you hit the next roadblock. And I feel like that's kind of what a lot of A Link to the Past tries to do. And that's how, like, the original Zelda game plays, because the entire overworld, you can mostly go through it as soon as you start and as soon as you get a sword. But each individual level is tougher and tougher in terms of making enemies that will kill you faster.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kind of gain hearts, find things, get new items in order to help you beat those areas. But it doesn't necessarily make you stronger in those areas. You don't feel any power in those areas. And unfortunately for a Zelda game, you don't go really back to previous areas to sort of demonstrate your power growth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I think that's a pretty good explanation as to your, you know, non-desire of going back to A Link to the Past. For some reason in my head, it's usually like in my top 5 Zelda games, but it's not like one that I have any personal, like, emotional attachment to. So thinking about it logically, I can kind of see where you're at there.
Yeah.
And that's it for the show. We made
Woo!
It. Yeah. We only edited, you know, this is going to be a nightmare. And we thank you and appreciate you, Kelly, the editor.
So thank you all for watching once more. Once again, I have been Emperor P. You can find me on our Zelda Universe Twitch on Tuesday nights, as we previously mentioned. You can also find me on my own personal channel, Emperor_P on Twitch. Those are the primary places where you can see me make content and yell into a microphone dumbly with my friends. What about you, Mr. Laughing Boy LP? Where can they find you?
Excellent question, Emperor. You can find me over on twitch.tv/laughingboylp, where I do a show called Dialogue Box. And that show, I've been doing live recordings with webcam. It's a whole new thing. Big old headache. And I invite guests over and we talk about different types of video game related topics, topics related to content creation as well. I just did an episode with Shinjinator, Nintendo Fangirl, and Sab Irene to talk about the Nintendo Switch OLED and kind of our thoughts about it. If you don't manage to watch those live, the VODs are there. You can also find those VODs on youtube.com/laughingboylp, where I do that show as well as an interview show called Let's Talk, where I bring in different content creators and talk about their craft and their, you know, personal livelihoods. So if you like that kind of stuff, you can go find me over in those two places, and then you can listen to me, you know, whine and groan about video games over on Twitter at the same name.
Awesome. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to throw it over to Eden for the credits, and we'll see you guys whenever they let us host again. Probably never.
Never.
Bye.
How does it feel to be banned from being able to talk to two people?
'Thank you, friend, for listening to another episode of the ZU Cast. It's time for the happy credits. Today's hosts were Andrew Fick, a.k.a. Laughing Boy LP, Laughter is Wonderful, and Peyton Garrett, a.k.a. Emperor P. I hope the P stands for puppies. Shona Johnson presented us with more Zelda history. I need to take a moment to congratulate Shona on the birth of her first child since our last episode. So cute! Randy Marr finally came back to us to talk about all of the neat stuff we saw last month at Nintendo's E3 Direct. Yay! The Zelda Anne and Realm brought us to the Zelda Realm for a wholesome deconstruction of the Breath of the Wild sequel trailer from E3. Connor Schultz spread the love with another edition of Peace of Heart. My name is Eden Biskin, and I'm the cute executive producer. My friend Realm is assistant producer. Kelly Timmerman is our head editor. She's the best. Andy Bundy is our awesome assistant editor. Our happy social media liaison is Mary Stowe. I'm the delightful Zelda Universe Forums liaison. An enthusiastic welcome to our lovely new graphics peeps, who make the pretty stuff we now have on our YouTube editions. Caden Garvey, a.k.a. the K-Dog, or puppies. And Alexandria Gribble. Welcome to the team, friends. The ZU Cast is a production of the ZUBC, a division of Zelda Universe's media team. If you liked what you heard today, please subscribe to the ZU Cast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcatcher. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube to find our editions with shiny new graphics. You can also send us some feedback by email at podcast@zeldauniverse.net, on the Zelda Universe forums in Community Central's ZUcast Hub thread, or by social media at Zelda Universe on Twitter and Facebook, and Zelda Universe TV on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. Please be nice to us. We're small. Thanks for listening. You're my new best friend.
Ugh, puppies.
How do you want to intro? Are you going first?
If you want, it's up to you.
I don't know, man. When I did this, I let Rosenberg take the lead.
I'm in.
That's usually how it goes.
With Rosenberg? No. Since when would Rosenberg take the lead?
When would... I don't
know, man.
Sometimes that's a enviable quality.
The main characters are almost incessant in its constancy. And a lot of the side characters have remained as well, along with a few...
Nice. I think that was sufficient.
Yeah, chef's kiss, mwah, as they say.
I mean, if they have any complaints, we'll just say, listen, Eden was pressuring us, putting all the pressure on us, you know, Eden.
We're not going to talk about how we had a month to do it.
There's also something particularly special about how A Link to the Past introduces what would become, aside from her name state? We are establishing the name state of Master Sword.
I don't know why I sounded like a really crummy news anchor when I did that, but we're not retaking it.
No retakes here on the Zelda Universe podcast.
Andy Bundy is our awesome assiller.
Come on, sweetie, let's play Metroid Prime.
No, yeah, no, exactly. My 3-year-old daughter really needs this game.
Can she read? That's besides the point.
No, exactly. It's all about hand-eye coordination. Nobody needs to read anyway.
Exactly.
Keep going.
So by the time
how does the story end?
It still by itself isn't really mentioned. And the building of the sword isn't necessarily talked about either. The descriptions in defying, we're not defying, we're finding. There's a difference. I defy this blade! That's not how that works.
I just noticed our minutes were running at like, we're at 43 minutes.
That's what I said. Like, this is getting about as long as the last one I did. Yeah. I feel bad that Kelly's going to have to go in and like try to edit most of this.
We're sorry, Kelly. We love you. You do great work. Anyways, let's ramble more.
This is, I was about to say, like, I wanted to be a host on a podcast because I like to talk.
Listen, that's their issue. You know, they put people like you, me, and Alex, like, in a room together to talk about Zelda, and then they're like, but don't talk too much. And it's like, have you met us?
Now you know what it's like to edit my own
There's me and Alex are actually banned from hosting the podcast together.
What happened last time?
It was like our raw.
Wasn't that episode 17 or whatever?
It was like episode like 3 or something. And Jesus. The raw length of the hosting stuff was like almost 2 hours.
Yeah, I'd ban you.
Yeah, so we're not allowed to, like, there was a time where we were literally watching a trailer for, like, Star Wars on during the podcast hosting.
Was it at least during the transition, like?
Yeah, it was during, I don't think so, actually, I think it was during the genuine hosting. I think we just said, okay, we're gonna pause for a second because you need to look at this before I forget. That's why me and Alex aren't allowed to work with each other on ZU projects.
There's something about the aura that surrounds this place. The perpetual. What's a perpetual? Perpetual is not a word.
Oh my god, I can't even do it. Look, what you have to understand is that you never forget your first time.
You never forget your first time.
What do you think, Peyton?
I can't even speak, man. I haven't had my first time yet.